creation. These stories are everywhere. The contexts may differ, finance, big pharma, or big tech, but the self-descriptions are similar. I am a particularly productive member of the economy. My activities create wealth, I take big risks, and so I deserve a higher income than people who simply benefit from the spillovers of this activity. But what if, in the end, these descriptions are simply just stories? Narratives created in order to justify inequalities of wealth and income, massively rewarding the few who are able to convince governments and society that they deserve high rewards, while the rest make do with the leftovers. Consider some of these stories, first in the financial sector. In 2009, Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, claimed that the people of Goldman Sachs are among the most productive in the world. Yet, just the year before, Goldman had been a major contributor to the worst financial and economic crisis since the 1930s. U.S. taxpayers had to stump up $125 billion to bail it out. In light of the terrible performance of the investment bank just a year before, such a bullish statement by the CEO was extraordinary. The bank laid off 3,000 employees between November 2007 and December 2009, and profits plunged. The bank and some of its competitors were fined, although the amounts were small relative to later profits. Fines of $550 million for Goldman and $297 million for J.P. Morgan, for example. Despite everything, Goldman, along with other banks and hedge funds, proceeded to bet against the very instruments which they had created and which had led to such turmoil. Although there was much talk about punishing those banks that had contributed to the crisis, no banker was jailed, and the changes hardly dented the bank's ability to continue making money from speculation. Between 2009 and 2016, Goldman achieved net earnings of $63 billion on net revenues of $250 billion. In 2009 alone, they had record earnings of $13.4 billion. And although the U.S. government saved the banking system with taxpayers' money, the government did not have the confidence to demand a fee from the banks for such high-risk activity. It was simply happy, in the end, to get its money back. Financial crises, of course, are not new. Yet Blankfein's exuberant confidence in his bank would have been less common half a century ago. Until the 1960s, finance was not widely considered a productive part of the economy. It was viewed as important for transferring existing wealth, not creating new wealth. Indeed, economists were so convinced about the purely facilitating role of finance that they did not even include most of the services that banks performed, such as taking in deposits and giving out loans, in their calculations of how many goods and services are produced by the economy. Finance sneaked into their measurements of gross domestic product, GDP, only as an intermediate input, a service contributing to the functioning of other industries that were the real value creators. In around 1970, however, things started to change. The national accounts, which provide a statistical picture of the size, composition, and direction of an economy, began to include the financial sector in their calculations of GDP, the total value of the goods and services produced by the economy in question. This change in accounting coincided with the deregulation of the financial sector, which, among other things, relaxed controls on how much banks could lend, the interest rates they could charge, and the products they could sell. Together, these changes fundamentally altered how the financial sector behaved and increased its influence in the real economy. No longer was finance seen as a staid career. Instead, it became a fast track for smart people to make a great deal of money. Indeed, after the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, some of the cleverest scientists in Eastern Europe ended up going to work for Wall Street. The industry expanded, grew more confident. It openly lobbied to advance its interests, claiming that finance was critical for wealth creation. Today, the issue is not just the size of the financial sector and how it has outpaced the growth of the non-financial economy, e.g. industry, but its effect on the behavior of the rest of the economy, large parts of which have been financialized. Financial operations and the mentality they breed pervade industry, as can be seen when managers choose